With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Bridge the Atlantic. We are your hosts, music web designer Ross Barber
and singer-songwriter Marcia Novelli.
This week we're joined by LA-based singer-songwriter, designer, international hugger and high-fiver Eric Masek. Eric's tracks can be heard in shows such as Life Unexpected, Melrose Place and 90210, and his upcoming EP was produced by Grammy winner Mikal Blue and features Dean Denning of Toad the Wet Sprocket. Eric is also a designer and is very hands-on in all aspects of his business, especially the design and branding side. We're looking forward to hearing more about his career and the advice he'd offer to fellow creatives. So, hey Eric, how's it going?
How you doing? Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. Let's start off really awkwardly and ask, and we're going to ask you three things about yourself that everyone should know.
Let me see here. I think one of the key things that I would say is I'm very motivated. It's one of those things I think about me that I get made fun of, actually, because I feel like I'm a kind of a workaholic. And I always kind of credit that to being born and raised in the East Coast, very like blue-collar society. I think another one that people might not know, because I think with being motivated, sometimes there's that intensity. But I'm actually empathetic. I like to like relate to other people a lot. So I like to take myself out of my own head, per se, and maybe like, you know, be a bit open-minded to somebody else's like thought process or psychology. And I think the last thing is I'm really sarcastic.
So everything you said was not real. Hey, I think
I said it at the end.
Yeah. We can relate to everything there, man. I think Ross and I would consider ourselves workaholics as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's bad
yeah.
sometimes.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it can be detrimental. Like a lot of people yes. are like, I wish I was motivated all the time. But other times you're like, you just don't know how to relax sometimes.
Yeah,
you know?
Sometimes yes. you want to be able to switch off and you can't. It's like, yeah. it's great when, you know, when you're working on something that you need to get done, it's great to be motivated. But when, you know, when you want to just sit and chill out, you can't because your head's always going. And I'm always thinking, what can I do next?
Yeah, I feel guilty. I feel guilty for relaxing, which is actually really bad.
No,
it's so important to rest as well.
I relate to that so much. And there's a lot of times, and there's a reason there's a saying why a lot of people are like, I need a vacation from my vacation, you know? And I feel like a lot of times you go on vacation, you're trying to relax, but you didn't complete whatever task sometimes before you go on vacation, then you're thinking about them, you come back and you're like, I just spent a lot of money on a, you know, hanging out with palm trees and still doing work.
All work, you know? No play makes Marcio a dull boy. So I'm really trying. I'm working on it. We should all try to work on that. Just
we should.
Being able to turn off a little bit. You know what's actually helping me? Is doing a lot of whiteboards lately and just planning out my week a little bit, my work schedule and basically saying, this is what I'm gonna do this week. You know what I mean? If I get it done, and it helps me get those things done, and I feel a bit more accomplished, and then I can relax. It's like I've given myself a break rather than otherwise, you know, and just writing down the things you have to do and kind of putting that away for next week or whatever, or the next day, or else, like Ross said, your mind's just going and going and going and won't turn off, you know?
The other funny part, too, to that, I think sometimes is actually scheduling time for yourself to be like, hey, I'm actually going to play video games for this
need to do
hour.
That.
You know, so it's like when you schedule, you still feel somewhat accomplished, but then you give yourself that, like, again, I think workaholics tend to be a bit disciplined in a certain respect. So sometimes actually having that, I mean, we tend to compartmentalize everything, I think, sometimes. So
Do you play video games?
I actually am. That's a little secret
nice.
Vice that I have. I'm a big video game dork.
What's your favorite kind of genre?
It varies, because I really love like RPGs, like role-playing games.
Right.
However, I call them waste your life games, because I know again, once, like, if you're a workaholic and you truly want to get something like done, like if you're all of a sudden going to take up a Final Fantasy, or you're going to take up, you know, Elder Scrolls type of thing, like, I mean, you're literally putting in like 100 hours maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to tell you a secret. Final Fantasy related secret. Like I love Final Fantasy, especially Final Fantasy VII, and I used to go to the hairdressers with a picture of Cloud and just be like, make my hair like this, and they're like, but you know this guy's not real, right? And I was like, yeah, I was like, but you can do it. And I used to have like white blonde hair, and yeah,
that's amazing. Seven one was such a great one. I got so involved in it. I think I've bought that game so many different times on platforms because like. They had it on PlayStation, then PlayStation 3, you could rebuy it. It's like,
but they're remaking it, right?
Like, no.
They're remaking it. Oh my God. And I'm going to sound like such a geek.
No, I
actually had tears in my eyes when I saw the trailer. And Marcio, don't laugh. The reason why is because Eric is going to understand, okay? Because if you played this game when you were like 15, uh-huh. They've been remaking so many games and everyone's wanted them to remake this for so long and they've always said, no, we're not going to do it. At least until we've made one that's better than 7. And we're all like, they're never going to make one as good as 7, so it's never going to happen. And then they announced this kind of out of nowhere, and watching the trailer for it, it was just like, it took me back to being 16 or something when I first played it. It was the first time I really kind of got into games, and oh my God, it's going to be good.
I never really got huge into RPGs. I like first-person shooters. Okay. But I also like adventure, that kind of thing. I like, some of those horror like games too, where it's like mystery, and I like that. But my favorite is probably first-person shooters, probably because you can jump in and jump out. And, I like ones that have a story as well, though, that still have like the storylines and not just like... But the problem with RPGs for me is the same thing. You just put in so many hours, and you can't just leave it. I mean, you got to keep going. You got to
because again, when you're 15, sure, I can play for 8 hours straight. Then no. I'm still supposed to play as a child, But now it's just like, you really have to like put in that time. But I completely agree with Final Fantasy VII. Going really quickly back to that because I feel like I was a huge fan of like Final Fantasy I on Nintendo. I was a Nintendo generation. Like you put a game in. Hopefully it works. You blow it a couple times, Yeah, and so you hope that your game of Zelda didn't erase, type of thing.
Yeah.
And I remember because you put it in, but you play for an hour or two and you're good. And then you walk away and you come back. Like, these games are so in-depth right now.
Yeah.
It's almost scary. Like, that's the thing is I'm actually afraid to play a lot of the new role-playing games because when I come back, I don't remember the button combos. I don't remember what hits what after a while. Like, it used to just be... A and B.
Did you ever have a Game Genie?
No, I did.
Game Genie? I remember that. You plug your game into the Game Genie. Oh my God, it's so hilarious. You know what? I think that's the funny thing about our generation too. If you think about it, like our parents would never be like talking about playing video games.
No.
And here we are, I think that's the greatest thing. I'm pretty sure our kids will all be in a virtual reality. It's the only way to go. It's going to be virtual. They're going to plug themselves in and be like,
Yeah, everything's now on tablet and stuff like that, too. Yeah. I mean, I do have to say, though, like, I was huge. I was a big... I was always playing outside. I played outside a ton.
Yeah, I was a bike rider, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, that is one thing that I do have to say. Like, as much as I'm a big dork as far as video games, I always loved going outside. And one of the other things, too, which is, just out of the RPG, but I love sports games, and I was always an athlete.
Oh, I wasn't.
So I loved like EA Sports franchise. Yeah. As much as they frustrate me, I love them as well. It's kind of that
actually,
like love hate.
That's probably the most sports I played as a kid was EA Sports on like Sega Genesis.
Oh yes.
So moving a little bit away from gaming.
Oh yeah, music. That's right.
Yeah, you're a musician, right? So tell us a little bit about the music on your previous album has been featured on TV and film, which is really cool. And I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about how those placements actually took place.
A lot of it, I guess, to get right into it, like just to give the answer, a lot of it is personal connection. I think as musicians, we constantly are researching and cold calling and throwing emails out to all these agencies, just kind of wishful thinking. And that's viable because you never know. It can potentially happen if you do have a good song. And I think that's what the music industry constantly says is if you have a good song, it'll find its place. And sometimes it's just very hard to kind of grasp that. But I will say with this specific incident, I ended up working with a company and became very good friends with one of the kind of head honchos of the company. And, you know, we went to Mixers, and he came to my show. They're based out of Chicago, and then actually they were based in LA for a little bit to try to branch out. So it's really that personal connection. And then he's always believed in one specific song of mine, and actually that song has never been placed. But ironically, then a bunch of my other songs have been placed in some of these TV shows. So definitely very grateful for it. And I feel like it was kind of a string of shows all in like kind of unison. And it tremendously did help. You did see spikes in, you know, that's my song I'll Be Fine, for instance, was...
Which is beautiful, by the way.
Thank you very much. And the placement was great. It was like 4 minutes right at the end. You know, wow. A lot of them are like, you know, 15 seconds, kind of a pocket or an instrumental. They take your voice out or something like that. But this was a straight up, like I kept going in and out of dialogue. And I watched it on Netflix going, this is really surreal. But I was like, it was one of those dork moments again where I was just like, I was really proud. You know, you wrote that song a while ago.
And which one was that placed in? Ross, I know you know, I can't remember which one was that placed in?
It was Life Unexpected.
Right, okay. And that was on Netflix, right.
Life Unexpected, yeah. And it was a very...
That's crazy.
It was kind of fun because I never heard of the show. And to be honest with you, I started getting comments on my social media. And they're like, Life Expected, you know, Unexpected brought me here. And I'm thinking like, do I have like a hippie fan base now? Like being like, oh, I was like so deep. Like life is so great and they're unexpected. And kind of like, and I was naive.
You're then all philosophical on it.
I'm the idiot. Yeah, I'm the idiot here thinking like deep thoughts. And then I'm like, oh, that's a show. And then I was so, so that was kind of an embarrassing moment. But I was grateful as soon as I found out what it was and that my song got placed.
So weren't you informed beforehand that it was going to get placed?
No, it was actually different. Normally you do.
Yeah, okay.
Normally you do. And I think what happened with this specific one, it was something, you know, it was called like a blanket deal. And in other words, it gets put on during the digital process instead. And so I think there's a lot of legal aspect that kind of goes into it where I actually did not get placed for that song initially, and then I did get placed. So this was a unique scenario. This wasn't a normal placement.
So for situations like that, for people who aren't aware and understand what placements are and how they work, you know, do you always have a choice of an upfront fee or a royalty fee, or is there a combination? How does that work?
There's a wide variety of ways. Again, like I said, this... I had to go through the bumps and bruises trying to figure this one out because, again, in my mind, I'm like, okay, somebody comes to me, I say yes, we agree on a deal, life goes on, and we're good. And then I realize there's a curveball. So it really depends on, even the film, for instance, that was just kind of a verbal agreement between me and a friend, which, again, I wouldn't necessarily advise. Everything went well because I'm very good friends with her. But initially, yes, you have a company that comes to you. They say, hey, we want to use your song. Here's the fee that they have. And again, I wish I had a better answer for Standard because I feel like,
you know,
Standard's been all over the place.
You know, how about if there's an artist right now that wants to know how they can start getting songs placed? I know it's all about connections, like you said. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what would be a step you would tell them to take, that they could take right now to get closer to being placed on TV and film, which obviously there's never any guarantee.
Yeah.
But, you know, what would you maybe say to them, a little bit of advice?
My advice would be to definitely research. Do your research. Like, that's one thing I think a lot of people just want a quick answer. Do your research about the companies. Do your research about why you want to be placed with the company. It's not all about just you as an artist. You know, you have to take yourself outside of your head. Of course, we all want to have placement. Of course, we want to have money. Yes, that's all fine and dandy. But do the research. Is it actually a company?
Money? What is it? No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Oh, wait, I'm in the wrong industry.
Money. What?
But I think doing the research, doing your homework, and reaching out to them in an actual, you know, manner outside of like, hey, can you place my music? Because I think there's a lot of artists that really, and I don't mean to sound derogatory, but it is a little bit of that, you know, place my music. You know, here's music. I like my music. I think it's good music. Let's get it in movies. You know, and I've talked to people. I mean, they really have the attention span that it's like you really have to wow them in about 10 seconds, if that. You know, and one thing I would have to say too is one thing that annoys that side of the industry is make sure that your tags are all, you know, like if you send an MP3, make sure it has all the information. It has the name, it has your name, that is so imperative. That's so important because if they click on something and it says untitled 1.mp3, you're done.
No good.
And I feel like I have to say that because again, if somebody is starting out, those are very pivotal things that make sure that you are as professional as possible, you know? And they may say no, and that's fine. But if you're going in with, I'm ready, you have a better chance.
Well, that's the great thing about MP3s, too, because you can take it with everything, even the beats per minute and everything. A lot of people probably don't realize you can't do that with a WAV file. You know what I mean? You have to do it with an... So you could send them a 320 MP3, which is great quality, you know, and take it with everything. I always take everything I send out. Anywhere.
You're very OCD with that.
Well, it's very important. Like he said, because you never know where that's going to end up. You never know whose hands or whose ears that's going to land on. And you want to make sure that's as easy as possible. Like you can even tag, I don't know if people realize, you can put your website in the tag. You know, that information, they just click right on it, you know? So yeah, I'm with you on that one, man.
Doing your due diligence, like early on, like as soon as you come out with an EP, MP3, whatever, a single, I would definitely say that is such a critical time, and it takes some discipline to push yourself to go through it, because we're all excited to be like, I got new music, check it out. Mm-hmm. But you have to really make sure you have all your ducks in a row, per se, before you really start kind of going out and attacking the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of want to just touch on the thing when you said you've got like maybe 10 minutes to grab, not 10, sorry, not 10 minutes.
Yeah,
I wish they had 10 minutes. And it's like 10 seconds to grab your attention. Because I actually want to give your publicist a shout out, because her email grabbed my attention in a way that I don't think an email has grabbed my attention like that for quite a while. She went to so much effort to personalize everything in this email. I don't know if you've read it, Marcio, but
no,
she
I'm
even mentioned your documentary, Walking Proof.
I'm actually pulling it up right now.
Yeah, she went into so much detail, like not too much detail, but she went into she just made it very personal, and she researched me, she researched Marcio, and she really just, it was very, very impressive. So I felt I had to give her a shout. So hey Betty Ann,
absolutely good then.
It was great.
Yeah, that's you're working great. With someone pretty awesome then.
Yeah, and she, you know, she went kind of over and above. We've been emailing back and forth a lot. She's been telling me lots of stuff about you. Nothing that you wouldn't want anyone to know. Like she's been very, just very good, and it's helped us to tailor some stuff that's happening later in the interview. So,
yeah. I don't think she knew about Final Fantasy VII though. See, so that's why I like this whole game process.
She knew you liked games, but she told me that she couldn't tell me which games you liked, and I was secretly hoping that Final Fantasy was going to be one of them.
I love that.
I'm reading this email right now. Yeah, you know what? We get a lot of submissions lately. Since we've started the show, it's gotten exponential, and that's one of the reasons why you're on right now. So go home and thank your publicist.
Yeah.
I just read that. Yeah,
she's great.
Yeah.
She's great. So I'm glad definitely giving her a shout out as well here. So
back to you. You crowdsourced your latest EP.
I did.
Which is really cool. You know, I crowdsourced my album too, which is it's a fun and very nerve-wracking process. As it's got a combination of a lot of feelings, but I'd love for you to tell me kind of what the process was like, and can we expect the same thing from a new record?
That's a very good question. And I do have to say I was very much opposed to doing it at first.
Really? Why is that?
I really pushed. It took me a lot to get into it, because again, I think I got stuck in my own mind. The, you know, crowdfunding was a new process, I think, for a little while. And then there's that stigma of begging for money, per se.
See, I don't look at it like that. I look at it as no different than a pre-order.
I agree. You know? I agree. But I'm saying my beginning process, why I neglected it at first, was because of that stigma. And I feel like once I convinced myself, which I think is what it kind of comes down to, really wanted to give it a chance, and still had that hesitation of, like, you know, they always say, you know, reach high. You know, a lot of people are like, if you think you can get this, you could probably get this or something to that degree. But I think I kind of played it kind of right on point. And I do have to say my experience really opened my eyes, because the funny part is I actually did get people that are like, you know, I feel like my mom was a little embarrassed to be like, why are you begging for money? And again, when people don't know about it.
My mom did the same thing. Exactly. What are you doing online asking for this? I'm like, Mom, that's how the world works now, okay? It's okay.
But
people want to support their artists.
There's TED Talks on it too. You know, one of the top selling artists, actually, she thought, I forgot, don't quote me on the numbers, but I think she was trying to raise like, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars, and she raised it for a million.
Amanda Palmer?
Amanda Palmer, yes. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I remember listening to that TED Talk going like, wow, like that's quite impressive. And that really like tests your fan base out almost to really, you know, who really cares about your music and stuff. And I think what I realized was how generous people were. People were people were giving, you know, I have an EP, five songs, you know, just say $5, $10, $20. And then there was people that really just wanted to support my music and would give $100, you know, exponentially, and then even thousands of dollars to a certain degree, because you have those people that truly believe in you. And that you don't know about being like, hey, go to my iTunes and download it. You don't have those, that detailed. So you actually have a personal connection with crowdfunding that is very important, that I did not realize before, because crowdfunding, you have to do something for them, and it becomes very personal. The other thing I have to say, I did have a successful crowdfunding, but the irony was I became even more successful towards the end, because, you know, with crowdfunding, I used Pledge Music, for instance, and with them, they keep it open until you complete everything. And when I started sending out pictures and being social, like the social media about it, and I was sending packages, I had personalized, you know, letters to everybody that ended up purchasing my EP. And I started putting it on Instagram, and people were like, I want one, I want one, I want. So where were you when I was starting the crowdfunding? But yet at the tail end of it, I had another, like a second wave of people that purchased my album because of, because it was happening now. And people
You also showed them the that it's there, you've created a community, which is really important. You know, if you, if your fans believe in you, you've got to believe in your fans. You know what I mean? And, and share, like you said, personalizing everything. It's so important. It's the small little things we can do to show them, hey, I care about you too.
Yeah. And you sit there, and I mean, the biggest thing, I mean, you're really putting in the time, depending on how many people. I mean, each individual package was personalized in some way, shape, or form. And I had, you know, marketing material, whatever they purchased, it was, you know, I ended up fulfilling those pledges. And really, like, it's cool because you have that one-on-one with crowdfunding. You know, people downloaded iTunes, it's simple, but I, you know, sometimes you don't have a clue, or it just kind of goes over your head.
Well, there's something to be said too about, like, letting people decide on their own what they want to pay for something too. Like, this is kind of going along the same ways where people will pay more. And I've lately really been attracted to the idea of saying, hey, here's my music for free. If you want a tip, go right ahead. You know what I mean? Like the whole noise trade kind of world, because there's something beautiful about that, you know? I mean, if they get it for free, they still get, and you still get an email address out of it, which is actually almost more valuable than $5, because then you've got someone you can contact again and again, let them know about new music. And it's kind of similar with crowdfunding, because obviously you state an amount, but people will often give more and more just because they want to support you.
One thing I'd like to ask you, is I know that you also run a design business alongside your music. And as a musician in general, you have to wear a lot of hats. You have to be doing tons of different things. You are. You're always wearing a hat. So yeah, you have to do so many different things. You're juggling everything. How do you manage your time effectively, especially considering that you have another business that you run?
I would lie if I said I probably did it properly, but there's always constant. I mean, you're always multitasking, I think, and I joke about saying that, but yeah, design is something I went to school for. I went to a 4-year school, and I think that was always something that's important to me. I feel like the hard part that I have in juggling is constantly trying to get back into the creative. You know, I should be writing more songs. I should be doing stuff that makes me smile a lot more, and I feel like I have done so much of that business stuff, and I feel like I've done it successfully, but I think, like we talked about very early on, if you're a workaholic, it's never enough. You know, so you can wear three hats at the same time, and you're like, I can get a fourth on there.
If you wear Pharrell's hat, you can fit like 20 underneath.
I want to try something.
What
I used to work with a lot of people, a lot of Czech people in a restaurant that I worked in a while ago, and I spent some time in the US, and I lived in a trailer park, because I worked in a water park, but we lived in trailers, and the trailer next to ours was a bunch of Slovakians. I know you're Slovakian. I learned a phrase in Czech. It's the only thing I know how to say. And I know Czech and Slovakian language-wise are pretty similar, right?
They're pretty similar. It's okay. Different, but it's similar enough.
Okay. Hopefully this does not come across as the complete opposite of what's intended to.
Okay.
If I said Maskratni oči. What does that mean?
I have pretty eyes.
It works. That's the only thing I remember I'd say. Everything else I was told to say was bad.
I was gonna say, like, who, like, what kind of Slovak people are those? That's like not the first thing that people would say. Normally people would teach you how to say nazdravie, probably,
which is
which is pretty much, it literally is translated to your health, but that's what they say for cheer.
Like, yeah,
so cheers, bros.
Hope you're well, you know, stay well, that kind of
thing. Na zdravie, like you're always, I mean, we're a big drinking country, you know, so.
Yes, I learned that. I had some homemade plum thing.
Pizza.
Oh my God. Pizza. Yeah, that was. Yeah.
So you have a lot of chest hair now. that's just like straight chia pet. Like that'll make it grow.
There was another thing I was taught to say, and they taught me it as it being a good thing, right? And I had to buy a new suitcase because my suitcase broke, and it was a few days before I left, so I had to buy a new one before I went home. I went to the shop, and I'd met the girl that was serving before. I knew she was Slovakian, so I responded to her when she gave me the suitcase, and I tried to say what I thought was thank you or like thank you very much.
No.
And I can't remember what it was I said, but she just looked at me and she's like, don't you ever say that to someone you don't know. And I was like, I mean,
do you remember what you
no,
said?
No, I mean, I think it had peachy in it, peachy something.
Oh yeah, that's a curse word.
Okay, so yeah, because I thought
that's
that meant.
That's the lady part down under.
Oh.
That's why she wasn't impressing me saying that.
Oh yeah, so yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of sense.
Yeah. Because I think I was just like, she gave me the suitcase instead of like saying thank you. I went,
like peachy. Vagina.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's probably not a nice version of her, is it?
Yeah, you probably like call her own lady part.
Oh dear.
Which actually I would have loved to see. That would have been a nice like 15-second Instagram post video style, like of her reaction.
Oh my God.
But it's you, I don't know if they taught you to say dyakuyem. Dyakuyem is actually to say thank you.
I mean, they probably did like tell me that, but I think they used peachy so much, like just in general conversation. I guess I just thought that's what it means.
Yeah, which is not nice. It's kind of one of those. It's a derogatory. Like it just it gets flown out, kind of like when we say ah, you son of a bee or whatever. Like you
yeah,
know, like,
yeah.
like you're not really calling somebody that or not. And a lot of Slovaks sometimes will. Like again, I played ice hockey a lot, and you just hear that word, and I didn't know what it was, because obviously, like, my parents are the ones that taught me Slovak, and so
right.
I never heard that word, and I'm sitting here going, like, why are you guys saying, like, what are you, like, hungry? Like, why do you keep saying peaches? You know, like, because I'm an American, I'm thinking, yeah. peach, what? And they're like, no, dude, this is, and then I learned what it was, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And so it becomes slang to just, like, you kind of say that, like, and it becomes normal, but it's kind of not nice.
Yeah,
and
that's kind of what
they
mean.
Use it. It's,
one of the mean things about being, I guess, like a speaking more than one language, you can like you can totally direct people in the very wrong way, and they find it funny. You know, you'd find it funny because you're like, "Haha, you said that."
Yeah.
And you
don't
know what it means. Oh, yeah. My aunt once told me. Okay, my grandparents almost exclusively speak Portuguese, and when I was like 13 or 14, I took up a summer job with my aunt and uncle who were like doing. They had their own. Janitorial business, so like mm-hmm. they would go in the middle of the night, they would go clean bingo halls and like restaurants stuff. It was actually kind of cool. And so in the middle of the night, it's like 3 a.m. which, why was I up that late? I mean, like 14. And my aunt told me when we go back home, right, to go to my grandpa and say in Portuguese, "Fuda maku." Fuda maku. And I'm like, what does that mean? That means I love you. And she's crying laughing. And she's like, you know, go say that to your uncle. And I say to my uncle, he looks at me like this, like, huh? Right? And I'm like, what does that mean? And she's like, oh, it means I love you, right? So the next day, my aunt's like, go say it, right? I say, "Fuda maku." My grandpa stands up, goes, hey! He starts yelling, it means fuck my ass. And she's laughing, crying. It's the way my Aunt Lena is. She's laughing. And my grandpa was so pissed off.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's an example that even family members can be cruel. Like that.
But that's one of the things that I actually love about culture, because again, it's the political incorrectness that I actually love about a lot of like European cultures. For instance, like there's so much perversion, I would say, like in the Slovak culture.
Oh, yeah.
But it's almost kind of like normal. It's not like you take it to heart.
It's like you said, son of a bitch. Like, I'm not really, it's not oh, you son of a bitch. You know, you're not really saying it in a mean way. It's
exactly.
It's a term of endearment, kind of.
Yeah.
Are you ready for 20 questions, Eric?
Let's do it.
All right. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Meat or veggies?
Meat.
CD or vinyl?
Well, I guess vinyl.
Pennsylvania or California?
Oh. I got to go with Pennsylvania.
We ask the tough questions here on Bridgie Atlantic.
We do.
Like the Mac or PC. Yeah, the important ones, like Mac or PC.
Mac, that's the Mac all the way.
Hockey or soccer?
Soccer.
Don't you guys call it football there in the
UK? Yeah, we do, but for the benefit of probably the majority of our viewers football. And listeners.
Yeah. I mean,
that's right, soccer. You can't go wrong with that. Breaking Bad or Orange is the New Black?
You guys, people aren't going to like me. I haven't seen either of them.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, my heart just broke. What's your favorite TV drama then?
You know what? It's tough. I actually don't have cable.
Do you have Netflix?
I do have Netflix.
Well, there you go. They're all on there.
I mean, I literally, like, I watch it. I watch TV in tiny spurts because
what's the last thing you've seen?
American Dad.
I'm a huge American Dad
but
fan.
But you know, it's so funny. The next
Futurama, all of it.
The next question actually is Family Guy or American Dad.
Oh, see, I think I have to go with Family Guy because that's what it originally got me. But I've been laughing my butt off on American Dad lately, and because of Netflix, I'm going back to like a lot of the earlier stuff.
Have you ever seen BoJack Horseman?
Only one episode.
Get into it, man. If you like adult, like animated series, this is a really good one.
Yeah, I started watching it yesterday. It's very
weird.
Just
started.
But yeah, it just started.
I watched 9 episodes of the second season yesterday because I wasn't feeling well, and I just laid down on my bed. I said, "Screw it." They're 23 minutes, and I watched 9.
Yeah, that's the thing is they're so short. So if I'll eat dinner, I'll just be like, "I'll just watch a quick episode."
Yeah.
I'll watch. But that's the thing is, I feel everybody who talks to me, they're like, "Oh, you haven't seen Breaking Bad? Like, you got to get into it." But 90% of the people that tell me that also say, well, also, you should probably give yourself, like, you know, an X amount of time because you're not just going to watch one episode and then you're just going to go nuts. So I'm like, okay, so it's like a role-playing game.
Yeah,
bring it all together.
Kind of is.
Yeah. Indie or major?
I guess how? Do I want to be signed to it or music-wise, do I listen?
Well, you know that, that's
more
depth than most people
have.
You know what? Just in general, you know what? It's tough to ask, like, what would you rather be signed to? Because, I mean, it depends on the deal, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess in general, where the state I'm at, just bare bones, I would just say indie.
Me too.
That's what I am, you know, and you have a lot more freedom.
Yeah.
But part of
the music I listen to personally is indie.
Same here. So music I listen to. But part of me is like, I wonder what Columbia can do with me.
Exactly. You know?
I wonder what the major label can. What Eric Masick would look like.
Well, basically nowadays, it's just what can like $100,000 or more do with you. It's pretty much just a bank right now and they have their resources, but...
Yeah, which still would be nice because indie would give you $100,000.
Still would be nice.
They'd be like, so we can, you know, you have a saving account, right? Let's work with that.
Oh, good.
Canada or Scotland?
I haven't been to Scotland, so I have to say Canada because I had a good time there.
So many people say that.
I'd love to go to Scotland.
I'm good with that.
And everyone says that too.
Yeah.
And then they never come.
Assassin's Creed or Uncharted?
Oh, Assassin's Creed. And because I'm a designer, I absolutely love their graphic design. Assassin's Creed is a very, very beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's me, you know, dorking out on graphic design.
Oh,
right
there. I'm huge on the graphics of video games too. I wanted to get absorbed in that world, you know.
Everything about Assassin's Creed, from their outfits to the font selection to I can go on. But yes, Assassin's Creed.
Cool.
Dave Matthews or John Mayer?
Dave Matthews.
Celine Dion or Marilyn Manson?
Oh, Celine Dion.
The Voice or American Idol?
The Voice. I have to stay true to that.
Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton?
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Twerk
Sorry, Ross.
Or work? It's okay.
Which one? Which was the last one?
Twerk or work?
Hmm.
I was going to think about this one.
I do. I got to go with work because I was trying to visualize my twerking skills and I don't think anybody wants to see that.
Ricky Gervais or Ricky Martin?
Ricky Gervais.
Whale or kale?
Whale.
Cool. Bette Midler or the Riddler?
Bette Midler.
And the most Finally. Important question.
Drum roll.
Ross or Marcio?
Oh, no.
Just remember that I like Final Fantasy VII.
Just remember that I'm also a singer-songwriter.
Just remember I'm also a designer.
Just I love
remember
it.
That.
Your turn, Marcio.
I don't know.
You win. Final Fantasy VII it is.
There we go. That's fair. Rouse always wins. It's okay.
So,
wait, we'll just change the subject. Okay. Do you have any music recommendations, or even film or art, any kind of recommendations in the creative world, but preferably music?
Yeah, I do. Actually, for music, one of the huge influence of mine that I feel like I don't say enough, I talk about Dave Matthews quite a bit. Obviously, he's mainstream, but have you guys ever heard of Citizen Cope, for instance?
Yeah, I've heard the name.
I think that he's a really cool influence for me, per se. I mean, again, he's not one of those like mainstream guys. He does well. He's an East Coaster as well, but he's somebody that I think people would enjoy his music. It's really kind of that head bobbing, like, you know. It makes you feel, and I think that's what I love about indie music a lot of times too, like that honesty, that sense of like ruggedness, and that sense of, you know, and G-Love and Special Sauce, for instance. I don't know if you guys ever heard of him as well. I think he's another guy to throw out in this discussion of, I want people to hear more of their music. You know, I really think that.
Oh, thank you. That's what this is about, man. That's what the show's about.
Some of these guys, I mean, and G-Love has been, I mean, he's under Brushfire Records, so he is. He's been around for 20 plus years doing this, and he's just this blues. If you guys are into blues, I mean, this guy live is just—he's just so talented. And you know, he's an artist that made it, but people don't kind of know it because you're not in the major label spectrum. You're not on the radio. You're not on the, you know, getting plastered on the marketing and stuff. So these are the guys that have just stayed under the radar, but they're great artists. So,
well,
those are my suggestions.
Speaking of which. Where can people find you online?
They could definitely, I mean, my biggest thing is I have a brand new website, so I'm excited about that, which
cool.
I designed.
Nice.
So, it's ericmasick.com. And if you spell my name, correctly, which I have E-R-I-C-K, so I have both the C and the K, and then Masick is actually M-A-C-E-K. And that is pretty much across social media. Like, if you go to ericmasick.com, I have all the links there. But, you know, it's at Eric Masick at Twitter, at Eric Masick on Instagram. And then Masick Music is the only difference.
That's for Facebook.
For Facebook.
But I'm sure if they type in your name, you'll pop up anyway.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Yep. And if you want to know what I'm up to and hear my music, go to marcianovelli.com.
And if you want to see what I'm doing, you'll find me at electrickiwi.co.uk. And I design websites.
Yes, he does. You never say what you do, right?
I know, that's why I did
so
it there.
If you want to know what I'm doing, just go to my website.
I threw it in there, and then I sort of realized, wait, if this is not a regular listener to the show, they're just going to think I'm really weird that I'm just like blurting this
just
out.
Go to my website. It's
I
just
didn't
pictures
really frame
of me and my dog.
Well. It should be.
Yeah, it should be, eh? Eric, this has been so great, man. Definitely come back again soon, and I wish you all the best of all the best of luck, but also, you know, success in what you're doing. Continued success.
Yeah. And same with you guys. I have to give you guys credit, so I appreciate you guys doing this and you know, working hard. I mean, that's what it's all part about, but, you know, connecting and reconnecting, and I appreciate it. So maybe when Final Fantasy VII comes out, we can have a little detour show.
We could do a special just on that. And I'll sit here and be like, I've never played it.
And I'll just be crying. I'll be like, and this is the part where this happens.
Oh, you guys are weird.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Bridge the Atlantic. If you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave a rating and review on iTunes.
You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So connect with us on there and let us know what you think of the show.
Thanks for being awesome, and we'll see you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.